The Lord be with you.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Glory to you, O Lord. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. A good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. A hired man who is not a shepherd and whose sheep are not his own sees a wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away. And the wolf catches and scatters them. This is because he works for pay and has no concern for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know mine, and mine know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I will lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. These also I must lead, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock, one shepherd. This is why the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own. I have power to lay it down and power to take it up again. This command I have received from my Father. The Gospel of the Lord. Yeah, it's such a powerful image, that we always bring to mind this fourth Sunday of Easter, Good Shepherd Sunday. Right? This is Jesus. Jesus is the Good Shepherd. And I don't know, perhaps it makes sense right from the beginning to say that the way that this word is translated, kalos from the Greek, it's a yeah, it's good, but it's also noble, handsome, beautiful. Right? There's something more compelling about it than simple, the way that we think of it, like simple moral quality. Like he is the good person par excellence. However we think of good person, good shepherd, there's a much richer quality to what Jesus is saying here than I think we hear when we glance at the passage, so to speak, or when we think of the Good Shepherd. Of course, our view of what a Good Shepherd is largely formed by Jesus, probably. I don't know how many of us have spent serious time around sheep, right? But we hear about sheep and shepherd throughout the scriptures. And this is an image that, of course, predates Jesus. It's in the Old Testament. It's through the Old Testament, and the shepherd to the sheep was as God is to Israel, and the shepherd for the sheep also is an image for Israel's king and the people. So this is all kind of at work as Jesus makes his way through this passage, as he gives us this exhortation, this instruction about his nature and ours too, in response to his being the Good Shepherd. It's a profound image. I'm surprised at the way that we study the life and significance of Jesus. And I say that as someone who's out of the academy, right? Like, I've studied these things, and sometimes it's a bit too clear that I've studied these things. It's like, how obtuse can I be today, right? Well, that guy's studied a lot of things. He's very smart about these things. So, of course, he's going to speak in a way that we don't understand. No, it shouldn't be the point. It shouldn't be, look at Jesus, the best teacher who ever lived, and eminently understandable, at least when he wants to be. The parables can be a bit tough to crack open sometimes, but that's as intended. But here, this is perhaps one of those images that could be the starting place for all theology. This could be the starting place for our understanding of what it means to be Christian and what our lives as Christians are. And here we see it. The way that Jesus sets the scene, right? He's talking about the hired hand, as it were, who works only for pay. So for that for that shepherd, the role of shepherding is not itself the highest good. But for Jesus, for the good shepherd, for the one who has come to call and claim his sheep, shepherding is the highest good. Right? So it's not as though Jesus is doing this for some other reason than the good of the sheep. And we see, what is he doing? What is he doing? Well, we see that the way that he sets it up, the sheep face danger. The sheep are facing danger. And the shepherd either flees or stays, right? He either runs away to protect his own interests, or he stays to defend the sheep. And he stays, and he suffers the fate that would otherwise befall the sheep. He's willing to. And by this part of the Gospel of John, Jesus' death is already a cloud that's forming overhead. But here we're to understand Jesus' death not as a likely possibility for him. We're to see it as his vocation. In fact, this is what he's come to do. He's come to defend the sheep all the way to death. And this is it. Jesus living the life of God as he does. Right? Jesus as the embodiment of Israel's God has come out to save his whole creation. And how does he do it? We find it in the passage as well. He says what? There is another flock. There are other sheep, and they have to be gathered into this one flock. So here Jesus, throughout his earthly ministry, his mission, he's summoning Israel to be Israel. He wants Israel to be what God always intended Israel to be, which was the communication of his own love for the entire world, to bring God's blessing to life to every corner of his creation. That's what Israel was meant to be. And he summons Israel. He not only summons Israel, he finds himself and makes himself to be the head of the new Israel to lead them into that life that God always wanted them to live. It's a life of blessing, but it's a life of embodying blessing for the other. And Jesus, as God, is totally for the other. Let's say God is, when we say God is love, what does it mean? What is love? I know I'm tempted to say, baby, don't hurt, right? But it's, what is love? What is love? Love is willing the good of the other for the sake of the other. So love is for the otherness, right? And this for the otherness is embodied in Jesus. And the more that he calls, summons, and gathers his flock to himself, the more they embody this, his own life of for the otherness. And so it's from this one flock, Israel, the new Israel that Jesus gathers to himself, and then through them to the other sheep, he will collect his one flock. He will gather his one flock to himself, the flock for whom he has suffered, the flock for whom he has gone to the end in living out God's for the otherness. So what do we have today? We have, of course, right, Jesus's strong reference to the resurrection here. I have the power to lay it down, my life, my own life, and power to take it up again. Right, and here and they're tied in this way. Right, the only way for us to have life is to give it away. Jesus makes his way through death and comes out the other side because he lives totally for the other. And that's then an achievement, a great achievement, that now needs to be implemented. Right? Jesus, this is what inaugurates God's kingdom, the overcoming of the dark forces that had long enslaved us. But it now needs to be implemented. We now need to see and believe Jesus. We now need to see his loving and trusting relationship that he has with his Father, and we have to be drawn to him to love and trust him and follow him wherever he leads, because his path is the way to life. He's defeated our enemies. I mean, it's the easy way to say, but he's the one who protects us from that which would destroy us. And that which would destroy us is not what we tend to think it is, right? It's not the assaults of others. It's not the attacks of our enemies. It's not slander and malice of other people. It's not even persecution. It's our finding ourselves outside the flock. That's our destruction. It's our finding ourselves off of the way that is life. And Jesus, in laying down his life for us, then not only calls us to his way, but he equips us, he inspires us, he encourages us to walk that way with him. And that way is the way of life. It is the way of self-gift. It is the way of God's blessing. And we, my friends, we are blessed, and we'll be blessed all the more by allowing God to make of our lives a blessing to all his people, all the many peoples that he wants to gather into his one flock.